We take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
And tonight we are looking at the classic 1970s.
Classic?
The cults 1970s.
Cult?
The bad 1970s TV series Fantastic Journey episode, An Act of Love. The intrepid party come through another zone where there's volcanoes and stuff, so they hide in a cave, which seems like a strange place to hide. But a guy shoots Varian in the neck with a dart, which causes him to dream, a very specific dream, about Gwyneth, a beautiful woman who dies violently in fire. He wakes up the next morning on a bright sunny day with no volcano apparent, and he walks to the Griffith Observatory, where he meets Gwyneth, exactly as he dreamed, and instantly falls in love with her because they have the most compatible auras he's ever experienced or indeed ever thought possible. And so they decide to fall in love, and he's going to abandon the crew, so he eventually ditches them after some touching scenes, and then it turns out that poor Gwyneth is being deluded by her mother, who she doesn't know is her mother, who's going to sacrifice her husband once they're married to the volcano, because that's what you do with volcanoes to keep the city from being destroyed. But eventually Gwyneth finds out about it, but she still goes ahead with it, but then she decides not to go ahead with it, and she falls in the volcano instead. And Varian is brokenhearted, but heads on his way with the other people. The end. Did I capture the nuances of that episode? Do you feel like, was there something I would...
I think you pretty much nailed all the salient points.
This was, yeah. Did you like this episode, Ben?
I hated it from the very first time I watched it back in network television.
Well, that's because it had all that icky stuff in it with the romance and stuff.
It was a bad story then, and it's a bad story now.
You mean it hasn't only improved now, with age?
It's only festered with age. And... only now, I mean, I look at it and the errors are even more glaring than they were back then. I mean, I thought it was as a teenager, I thought it was a terribly written story. Now, I think this is one of the worst things that's ever been put out. I mean, I put that right there with some of the worst episodes of Man from Atlantis.
Make
it's close to Imp.
How about the one where he's in the Old West? Is it close
actually,
to that one?
Actually, that's not a bad comparison. That is a very
Did
fair
we review
comparison.
That one?
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
We reviewed at the same time we reviewed Naked Montague because you wanted to torture me.
Ah, okay. So we did two at once. All right. I remember the episode. I just don't remember whether we reviewed it or not. But
because it's not that memorable. But yeah, this is right up there. I mean, it falls into that level of bad. This story was bad on so many levels. And one of the first things is when the episode opens up. I mean, as you said in your synopsis, I mean, it starts off with volcanoes, but then we cut to a cave where there's all this cult stuff going on, really weird angles, spooky music, and the first thought that runs through my head is this is not an episode of Fantastic Journey. This feels more like a little Night Gallery-ish. And then to go from there to how everything in the zone looks absolutely fine.
Yeah.
The day after a volcanic eruption and lava.
Yeah, lots of lava. They had pictures of volcanoes all over the earth. I recognized
three or four
of them. This
was Krakatoa level.
It was, yeah. And I thought it was interesting when they came out of the zone vapor zapper thingy. The first thing they see are these big rocks, and Willoway says, now this is very interesting. These are volcanic bombs. And they're blown out by volcanoes. So I think I can give you some idea of what this is. And then Scott, who's looking at the massive volcano looming right in front of them, says, well, we don't have to wonder where it came from. It's right there. It's like, how did you not
actually see
the massive volcano with the lava and the eruption and everything pouring out that
it's
was right
first
in
thing,
front of you with the noise and the sound and the, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's the first thing you would notice the moment you pass through that energy threshold into that zone. That would be the first thing you'd see, and especially if it's at that proximity, you'd be feeling the heat.
First thing I'd do is be stepping right back into that proximity zone.
I'd be going to the other side.
Yeah.
Immediately. And that's the one thing that always bothered me. You know, they never go backwards when they could to escape a situation.
We assume that they can.
We assume they can, based on the pilot. I mean, Varian comes back.
He travels back and forth. That's right. You're right.
So it can be done. But they just don't do it because it's bad writing.
Yeah. Oh, we need to find cover. Yep. How about right back there?
Right back where you came from.
Wait it out for 12, 24 hours. Try again. Poke your head through. See if it's safe.
And the fact that, I mean, if you pass, I mean, now, this then brings up an interesting question. If they were to go back, would the lava go through? Hard to say. But given the nature of that volcano, it would kind of suggest that maybe it's been blowing its top for a while. And
obviously.
And if you go through the energy barrier again and go back, take a look at the zone you were just at and look at the ground right at the threshold and say, oh, well, the ground is perfectly safe here. So are we.
Maybe only organic things can pass through the zone. I mean, when I say organic, I mean organic things except for their clothes and that rock that Scott carries with him, apparently, which would be inorganic. But it's because it's in his organically grown backpack. Maybe. Never mind.
Never mind.
Yeah,
it doesn't work.
It doesn't
work.
And then to
give us this culture that appears to, I mean, even from the first ceremony, they appear based on clothing and just their overall grooming standards that, oh, they're a tiny bit advanced and yet their behavior suggests otherwise.
They have a heck of a lot of cleavage.
Ooh, lots.
I must admit, you know, we're watching these on YouTube. And I'm watching, I personally am watching them through YouTube on my Apple TV.
As am I.
On a big screen TV. And I was kind of like the submarine women on UFO. I could not tell if the high priestess's outfit really was as revealing as it looked to be, or whether there was a fabric front, flesh tone fabric front in front of her cleavage.
I could not tell.
I couldn't tell because of the resolution, but
yeah.
I don't think there was supposed to be. I think that was supposed to be cut to her belt line cleavage.
I think that's what
William
are
Ware
meant
Feist,
to think.
Type outfit.
I mean, it's very possible that when they filmed it that there was some kind of netting or body stocking, but it was so well masqueraded that for television at that time, they knew that when it would come across the air, that people might think, ooh, look how scantily she looks. This is an advanced society. They're really bold with their clothing. And
you can definitely tell how advanced the society is by the size of their cleavage.
Yeah.
Apparently.
And the comparatively small size of their brain.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll get to that. let me ask you a question. How does this work as a plan? Let's say it doesn't work. you're an advanced society, and you happen to have this sort of quaint notion that you have to sacrifice human beings to the volcano periodically to save yourself from complete and utter destruction. And so you place people out in the middle of the field waiting for somebody to come through the time zone, and then you shoot them with a dart that gives them the ability to see the future, right? Because
yeah.
Was that what that dart was supposed to do? Because
I don't
thought
think
it
that's
was supposed
what the
to be
dart
a
was,
love dart.
I think it's a love dart, but I didn't get the feeling that that's what it was supposed to do. But because Varian is kind of unique to who he is, plus his...
Do you think that's what it was?
I think because Varian is somewhat psychic,
because
at least how it's being portrayed, that he had an effect that maybe most people don't have.
So, I mean, the high priest did say, tonight he will dream of Gwyneth. And so that clearly implied that they were controlling his dream.
Well, that's true. I mean, there's no doubt that it's not just a trank dart. It's a love potion. And now that does...
Or an aura matching program.
Well, it's possible they're from... One thing we didn't talk about much is that...
They're aliens.
They're aliens. They're from another planet. So maybe they've got some kind of technology that allows them to chemically induce prospective suitors to dream of individual women. Who's to say?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a BS idea, but...
It's as plausible as anything else in this episode.
Yeah, about.
Pretty much. And so Varian does, in fact, see her in exactly the position that he saw her in his dream. Oh, he gets up in the morning out in the bright, sunny, clear day, blue skies, nice grass, trees, nothing at all like the hellhole that they go to sleep in.
Yeah, forget all the volcanic ash that would be flying through the air at that time.
But here's what I like about this episode.
You liked something?
I like the fact that Mr. Whiskers was on the job, following Varian, you know, helping Scott find the peephole that they've somehow built into their sacred temple so that people can see their dire secrets without the priests knowing.
You know, I think you're right. And actually, silly as this is, I think that's one of the elements that allowed my mom to say, okay, you can watch this, because she was really intrigued with Mr. Whiskers. The idea of me watching science fiction was something that my mom just, you know,
like,
growing up.
That's no, but to show it a cat, that's okay.
That's okay.
This is like a precursor to the all of the internet. Oh, cat videos. Okay.
Precisely. That's the only reason I have a computer. Because my mommy says, hey, there's cats on there. Okay, I'll let you have one. But as it is, I mean, because of the cat, my mom watched the show. And because she watched it, I was allowed to watch it.
This is the funniest moment ever on Fusion.
This is more amusing than the episode itself.
Okay, got to pull myself together. Really just struck my funny bone, right?
Mm-hmm. But it was all about the cat.
Because the cat's not in the opening credits.
Nope.
And Mr. Whiskers, amazing psychic cat from that another planet.
That would be funny. Must admit.
Okay.
But you're right. The cat did get a lot of air play. Here. And I did like the way the cat was used. It was more than just this little thing that, you know, this animal that would come up and reveal certain plot complications in the story. But, you know, the way it, like I said, the way it helped lead Scott to this people so that he could see everything that was going on. I mean, it did help advance the story. So I like the fact that we had that element.
Well, you know, I think there's something that they've put in there that this cat is some alienish intelligence, and yet most of the time it's just something for Liana to hang on to. And so here, you know, not quite doing a Lassie, but better. I'm sure this blew their entire cat wrangler budget for the series. The cat will never do anything else ever again, because they had like 5, 6, 7 scenes of the cat walking purposely, following Varian, following Scott. There was even that exciting running scene where the cat chased Scott at full speed into the place. I mean,
yeah, that must have taken a week to film.
Never work with children or animals, and there you
mm-hmm.
go.
That's right.
So, anyway, Varian sees this girl, and their auras are compatible, and so they go back to, like I said, it's Griffith Park Observatory, which is their amazing city there by the volcano that's nowhere to be seen.
Not at that point of the story.
No. And so like I said, with Willoway at the beginning where he said, you know, these are volcanic bombs, there was also an exciting lesson in bad logic in this episode. Right? Do you catch that one? It's like, you know, when we came to this place, there were these primitive people here, and they kept sacrificing people to the thing.
And we tried to tell them they were wrong.
You're stupid.
And then the city quit.
And then the city got destroyed,
and turns out they were right.
Talk about drawing the wrong conclusion there.
It pissed me off, to be honest. I mean, it made me angry.
It really was bad. That's joke-level bad logical reasoning.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I always figured that a society that was that advanced to have spaceflight would be able to have some kind of technology that would allow them to understand geothermal energy and be able to have a really good scientific understanding on simply how volcanoes work instead of immediately resorting to superstition.
Yeah, we have this science called volcanology, and
we're more advanced than they are.
Yeah. Willoway knew more about volcanoes than they did, clearly. And he's a rebel scientist from the 1960s. Anyway.
And I think that's one of the things that bugged me the most. How is it that Willoway, you know, and even if you don't want to put Willoway into the picture and just look at us, humans as we are today, how is it that we, a non-spacefaring species, can have a better understanding of, or let me rephrase that, how can an alien spacefaring species have a lesser understanding of volcanology than us as we are today? That's what makes this episode totally fall apart.
All right, I'm just going to say, for the sake of argument, I've been out of town for a week, and I've been really cut off from the news. And I came back, and I've been scanning the news this week. And here we stand with a news article about some women who stripped their clothes off and took their picture on the top of a mountain in some, I'm just going to say it, barbaric, primitive, superstitious backwater of a country, which I can't even tell you which one it is, but... And a few days later, they had an earthquake, and now these people are under arrest, and they're being blamed for offending the gods of the spirits on the mountain that caused the earthquake, and then tell me that actually we're really much more advanced than these people. I mean, my cynicism really says we got a lot of people that still buy this crap.
I'll give you that.
That was in the 1970s. So
no, that's today. No, I'll give you that. I mean, even here in the States, if there is some natural disaster that happens someplace, it's my fault.
It's gay marriage, or something. Yeah, we're filled with people who are just.
Yeah, I mean, in that respect, we are not very. We're not better. No, we're not. But at least when it comes to. There are pockets of population. I'd like to think that it's the majority of Americans, not the number that the slanted news media would like. Oh boy, I went down that road. Not that the news media would actually like people to think. I heard that.
But what? I was sorry. I've had a little cough.
But there are enough enlightened people in the world today who have a scientific understanding on why things happen. Yes, okay, so a hurricane hit Louisiana and flooded it. But guess what? That's because of the advancements in global warming, not because you've got a bunch of gays that are just frolicking around during Mardi Gras.
Who is going to protect us from them experts and intellectuals? Who's going to save the common man? That's what I want to know. Somebody's got to stand up to those people and their learning and stuff.
But even with us today as a people, okay, so we've got a split population. Part of us is, we're enlightened. We look to science for understanding on how the world works. And then you got the other people that like to base everything on religious superstition. But here in this story, we've got a space-faring race.
Mm-hmm.
And within one volcanic eruption, they're just two steps away from resorting to barbarism. If I mean this
what do you
is already
mean two
barbarism.
Steps away? That is barbarism.
It is barbarism through the sacrifice, but becoming another Lord of the Flies kind of situation where they're practically cannibals.
Okay, which is worse? Now, okay, I think I know the answer to this question, but I'll pose it anyway. I mean, which is worse? You take people in human sacrifice, or you do it to unwitting girls, basically. You get them to fall in love with their true love and then yank the guy out and throw him in the pit right after their honeymoon night. I mean, it's not just barbaric. It's
savage.
It's why that particular... I mean, the trope is that you throw a virgin for sacrifice. But here... That's not what
they're
doing.
It's the other way
around
because you need the woman to stay alive because she is going to help propagate the species.
She's now pregnant.
Exactly.
Which, okay, that could be a feature of the alien race.
That's a gamble. So maybe there's something more to that little love potion that's also a fertility drug.
Well, their race could be different from ours. So, I mean, they're not human. So, therefore, they could... breed in an entirely different way, which of course means then variants probably not a compatible match, so that's another story. Where are your underarm appendages that you use for mating? We don't have those in my time. Anyway, but it just seems like such a bizarre try. Obviously they had to make it work the way around to use Varian instead of traditionally, it would have been Leanna, and they needed a variant episode. So they had to come up with this myth. But it's just, why is there that peephole in the temple?
Well, that was going to be my big question. I mean, it's not just the peephole. It's a hidden chamber, and it's easily accessible.
Yeah.
First by Gwyneth, then by the cat, and then by Scott. And I'm like, okay, why is it there? And if people, or if Mr. Whiskers in this latest case, can so easily find it and go in there, why the heck has this thing not been sealed? Or at least given some kind of a special panel? I mean, what's the whole purpose behind that thing?
I don't know. I really don't know. It does seem to be just there so that you can oversee their plans without them knowing about it.
Yeah, that's all it was. It was just a means so that Scott could see what was going on and then... try to help interfere, which wasn't much, and stop the sacrifice.
So, the story as we've been given, Gwyneth doesn't know her family history. She says that her dad died before she was born, and that her mom died during childbirth.
Which is probably
true. That obviously was. And that her mom died during childbirth, which turns out to be not true. Because
total lie.
The high priestess is her mom. And when she finds out, instead of running to Varian, the man she loves, and say, run away, run away, she goes to the high priestess and she says, why would you do these things? And the high priestess explains, I am your mother. It's the way we are. And she gives her that stupid logical fallacy about, oh, we're going to have to do this because it killed the primitives. And
which doesn't speak very highly of the daughter either because she buys it.
She goes along with it. Yeah, she does.
She
actually
totally buys
it. She has misgivings. But she believes
what her mother tells her. It's the only reason she's going along with it. I'm madly in love with Varian. But yes, my mother's right because if I want you,
the mother who's lied to
people,
me her entire life.
Yeah, but she knows what she's talking about anyway. When it comes to the volcano god, so I must go along with this anyway. I mean, yeah, the illogic.
Okay,
in
but,
this is just everywhere.
Okay, but so the. From what I get of the story, mom says, well, your father and I, and we had our one night, because they do the one ceremony one day, and then apparently you go off for the wedding night, and then the next day they kill him. So he does the dirty deed, and we know that because the high priestess gave birth to Gwyneth. So that's an essential part of the equation. And then she talks about, it didn't hurt for long. It's like, the pain goes away.
I got over it.
I got over it. And, but I've always had that. I've always loved your father, and we have that together for all eternity. And so, you'll have that too, and don't worry. It's a good thing. Now, that implies to me that mom's been alone.
Probably.
All these years. Doesn't that sound right to you?
Yeah, kind of get the feeling that she's lived a solitary life since then.
And yet, it's very obvious through the plot complication that has absolutely no bearing on this story whatsoever, that the High Priest clearly plans to make Gwyneth his own.
So right, does that mean the High Priest is immune, that he will not be subject to the sacrifice as well because he's High Priest? He can take any woman he wants and knows that he'll live for, you know, he can live out the rest of his life, I would
imagine.
Is
that what the previous High Priest did with Gwyneth's mom? That's my point. I mean, it seems like that's part of the ritual when he's talking about it earlier, as soon as I know that she'll be mine.
But, and I'm like, dude, do you have any idea what's going to happen to you?
But that's not how mom, well, he obviously knows, and he's the one that would control it. I mean, we all know that the people who choose the people to go to the sacrifice are always immune to that because they're the ones making this crap up. You know, so it's my rules, you die.
Religious power and control. That's all it is.
That's right. So, but it just seemed like, so we have that guy glowering at Varian throughout the course of the episode. It never plays
out. No, it doesn't play out at all.
In any way, shape, or form, except there at the end when Varian's slaughtering them all with blood spattering against the wall. Oh, wait, never mind. That never happened. Yeah.
No, but of course not. Varian's a pacifist.
Varian's a pacifist who is in love and in pain. Basically what happens at the end, I'll skip ahead here, is that she continually has more misgivings. Varian begins to have more recollection of the dream he had, which included Gwyneth dying rather mildly in fire. I think if, you know, when she's standing in the fire going, in the dream, you'd think she'd be screaming bloody blue murder if she was being licked by flames as she's supposed to be. That's just a directorial choice. But so this dream he's having is that they induced in him is prophetically showing him that she's going to die in the fire instead of him.
It would seem that way.
And she sacrifices herself. So clearly they didn't give him the dream that they expected to give him.
And I'm basing that on the fact that because he's different than the people that are...
Good question.
In that zone. I mean, who knows? And again, it could be again that because Varian is a rather unique human... theoretically, at least in terms of this series, he's supposed to be a more mentally evolved human in that he has psychic ability. So, you know, for the sake of the story, maybe the potion didn't work quite right and that it also enhanced other areas of his mental capabilities, thereby allowing him to have a vision of the future.
We're just going to have to run with that because
it's the only thing I can think of.
There's no
other explanation
in this story. What about the ending there? Not the ending after the violence, but the scene where Gwyneth throws herself into the fire instead of Varian, and he whips out the sonic screwdriver
and he just goes ape.
He goes ape, blasting guys backwards. Through the air and blowing
destroying
up
the entire temple.
Destroying the
causing,
temple.
Causing structures to fall. And
strangely enough, causing the earthquake to come and destroy the place, too. Sort of like they didn't get their sacrifice and maybe the god really is angry.
Well, I kind of get the feeling that he actually, if we're going to go with the sonic energizer, I mean, at one point it appears that he does, I have to see it again, but it looked like he actually aimed it down at the pit.
I couldn't tell. I mean, he was really
it's
in a
hard
rage.
He was just going all over the place, but I kind of get the feeling that if there was clearly there was an earthquake and a volcanic eruption of sorts, but it was triggered by his rage and what he was doing, and maybe the sonic energy that he was putting out there kind of affected the lava bed that was under the crust or underground and just caused all sorts of mayhem.
Okay. Let's do a character check here, and we'll start with Varian since he's the primary character in this story. What did you think of his performance?
Unhinged.
Unhinged. Okay. I felt that
and not believable.
I felt that the love story was not particularly believable.
No.
Although on the other hand, because Oh, this is... Oh, I'm going to get letters now. Because he's such a pacifist, I have to admit, I always feel that Varian is going to say something utterly illogical and wackadoodle anyway from time to time. Because. Because he's that, you know, he's supposed to be playing a character that is not like us. Like, you know, in the future, we're more involved and we're pacifists. And so, therefore, you kind of have this, he's going to act different from us. So, in a way, when he got around to that whole thing with the aura, I it was like, okay, that's just a line you can't relate to. It's like, okay. But I had trouble buying that he was in love. It's too low-key. And yet at the same time, too over the top.
Mm-hmm. It was a bad plot device just to create a story, a self-contained episodic story for network television. You need to have him fall in love just like that so that we can have this development take place.
Well, what was wrong with them stumbling into that city and Varian finding her and their auras were compatible in the ways of the
Yeah.
And then, so he decides, you know, that's it. This is actually the woman for me. I mean, why do they have to induce the love potion dart future foretelling thing at all? Why did we have to do that?
Why did we have to have the high priest?
Yeah, and why was the high priest there being jealous when that led to nothing?
Why did the high priestess / mother have to keep her parentage towards
a secret.
Gwyneth, a secret. I mean, there's a lot of why did they kind of scenarios that are taking place here. A lot of questions that never get answered. This is just one more.
Before we drift off the character check, though, there was one thing that when I watched the episode, I was like, wow, that's good. I felt that his heart-to-heart with Scott and the way he broke up when he was, you know, trying to explain how happy he was and yet was obviously sad that, A, he was leaving his friends, and that, B, he clearly has a sort of fatherly interest in Scott. And he sold that voice breaking up kind of cracking for me when he was... Not when he was saying goodbye to Scott, but when Scott was sad about him leaving and he said, you know, I want you to be, can you please be happy for me and stuff. And I thought, that is so, that performance there, that one little bit was so vastly superior than every other bit of acting in that episode on his part that it felt like I was watching, you know, this is something that maybe Jared Martin does in his workshops.
I was about to say that, and I think this is an actual credit to his ability as an actor. The only problem is that he's given bad material most of the time, and you can there's only so much that you can do with a bad story. You can only take that so far in an acting performance, and I wouldn't be surprised if when Jared saw this one scene, he thought, oh, something relatable, something I can actually do and positively sell. And you're right. I thought the scene between him and Scott was very well done and easily the highlight of the entire episode.
Yeah, it did. It showed that deep connection that he's formed with Scott.
And I believed it.
Yeah. You know,
I totally believed
it. Scott has lost his dad and Varian has stepped in to that place. And, you know, even back to the point where, so you remember that letter your dad gave you kind of thing that the tie-in back to the episode? It just, that felt like, you know, what would happen if one of the members of the team were to decide they're going to leave? So, yeah, I was okay with that. I was okay with that scene, mm-hmm. but then the rest of it was just...
The rest of it was abysmal, but I was very much okay, more than okay. I enjoyed that scene between the two of them enormously. It was very, very well played out.
Okay, how about a Willoway check? I thought there was no evidence of the evil Dr. Smith madman genius here.
No, we didn't have much of a Willoway in this episode to begin with.
No, there wasn't a lot of Willoway in the episode, but what there was he was pretty level-headed across the board, you know?
Yeah.
He was accepting that if that's what Varian wants to do, then congratulations. You know, she seems like a very beautiful woman, which obviously is just an incredibly degrading comment.
But typical from someone of that time.
Right, right. And would be typical in a TV show right now if somebody said, this is the woman I'm going to marry. And,
you know,
the first response is every person would go, well, she's lovely.
It would be very appropriate for network television at that time.
Sadly. Like I said, I think you'd see it now. I think it's not just on network television. I think in real life, I think that still happens. In fact, I'm sure it still happens. People just still judge women, their bride material, as they're pretty, and that's wrong. On the other hand, what Elsie is supposed to think when he's fallen in love with her in the space of about 3 hours and decided to marry her and spend the rest of her life with her, he couldn't possibly know something was really up. Yeah, you couldn't possibly be thinking that he got there and he said, it's her brain, honestly. It's everything about her. It's like, you've known her 3 hours. What you know is that she's pretty. So, six of one, half dozen of the other. At the end, when he had the little talk with the mom, I said, if you learn anything from this, is take from it. Take the lesson from this. It's like it's like they're trying to play Willoway as the guy that Varian says he is, instead of the sort of cantankerous Willoway that we've seen to some degree. So we've seen sort of a mix in the previous episodes. And there was no cantankerous Willoway. It was all just sort of like, this seems like a pretty pleasant guy. Actually,
he does come off as that, and it's sort of a validation, if you will, to the Willoway that Varian keeps saying that he is.
Right, right.
So yeah, we're getting that this very wise, highly educated and enlightened man. Well, enlightened. Got to think about that, but still very, very intelligent.
Who would banish a group of people to the wilderness, steal all their androids, reprogram them to be his own organization, and capture a woman and keep her to be his bride. That enlightened man.
Yeah, that enlightened man. Okay, I got nothing anymore.
it's like
who are we talking about?
I don't know. It's like every time he goes through one of those zones, perhaps some of the evil is sucked out of him.
So it's a purification process.
I got nothing on Scott except for, now I thought, Eisman did okay with
He's okay.
He was okay with the whole caution. You know, I want to go back and give him something because I mean, apart from the fact that he conveniently pulled a rock out of his thing that he references a previous episode in that we never saw, that part was a little convenient. But the fact that, you know, he clearly doesn't like the fact that Varian's leaving. And Varian gives him the talk and says, you know, be happy for me. And you see, again, to Iceman's credit, you see that where he puts on the brave face for his friend.
Right.
Yeah. And then when they're leaving, it's kind of that moment where you go from, I'm just doing this because my friend wants that, to, damn it, no, I really want him to understand that I care and that I'm happy for him. And so the rock wasn't as bad as it could be. But that's all he had to do in this episode. So I just bring that up to the point. Fred, though, kicks butt in this episode when he's like charging that place and tackling those alien guys and punching up. I mean, he was
very really physical.
He was. It still didn't do him any good because he didn't get there in time, but.
No, which made that whole storyline a little weird because by the time they got there, that entire ordeal in the temple was done.
Yes.
Varian had already taken out his anger. He'd had his revenge on losing his new wife, and that's it. So having Scott – okay, I can understand why you use Scott to have him go in there. and view what's going on. Well, actually, no.
Yeah, why is Scott?
You don't need
Scott,
that either.
Scott viewed it, and nothing that Scott
nothing comes
did.
To light. So you don't need that either. You there's no point. You could just have them continue to go on, and then maybe if the earth trembling was severe enough that perhaps they were able to feel it, and which now brings up another question: if you go into another zone, can you feel the earth shake from a previous zone?
I'm sure there's a some sort of crass comment about Liana and feeling the earth move, but I would not think so. Let's put it
so
that
assuming
way.
That they were in the same zone,
yes,
and they felt the earth tremors and saw the volcanoes go off, I could see that as being a reason for them, one, to double back. And if they had gone far enough, yes, it would take them enough time for them to get back. Well, it still took them, and they hadn't gone back that gone out that far. But it would make more sense at that point for them to double back because they're concerned over what's going to happen to Varian and Gwyneth.
So actually, there is a reason for them to come barging in at the end. What would Varian have done if Fred hadn't come in and basically said, dude, you got to get out of here? I think he'd have died there.
It's possible.
I think he would have just continued sonicking around him and died.
Mm-hmm. He probably would have brought tears. The entire temple down on him.
Yeah, I think so. So, I mean, they did have to have him kind of run in and pull him out because I think they were trying to convey that his despair was, his grief was genuine and overpowering. That I actually was kind of wondering if he was going to kill the high priest or cause him to die, but they did not, which of course if they had, then his pacifist thing would be gone.
Right.
And, I mean, there was that little bit of tension there in that scene. It's like, is this enough to make the man from the 23rd century with awesome powers go over that line and kill somebody who justly deserves to die?
Well, the fact that he's committing violence against another people. I mean, let's go back to the
first...
He has
done that a little bit, where he knocks people out.
Yeah, but let's go back to that very first episode where he tells them that when they were going to effect a rescue, one of their party that are being held by...
the pirates.
The pirates. And he says, you know, don't ask me to do anything violent or destroy property.
Destroy things.
Destroy
that's
things
right.
Because that's against my philosophy.
Yeah. So he did destroy things in this.
Oh, he just went. I mean, he completely went over the line. He is shy of actually killing someone. And it could be argued that he indirectly did.
Everyone
through his actions.
You know.
That he created things to, you know, fall apart and get destroyed and whatever, and people were killed in the process of that. So he crossed several lines, which I found to be very inconsistent. I mean, I can understand why he is completely grief-stricken and just out of his mind over what had happened. But for a person who has got this philosophy, a cultural philosophy that they abide by of total pacifism, to all of a sudden become everything but seems a bit of a stretch.
Okay, I'll tell you what. I can totally buy it. Not the way they played it.
No, no, I'm saying, well, not the way they played
not
this
the way
one.
They play. But I mean, I can see that because, again, like I said, Varian is from this pacifist culture, and that's wackadoodle to me. I mean, and not saying that we should be violent or anything like that, but there's a point there where, you know, you kind of implies in Varian if somebody came up and tried to stab him with a knife, he'd have to let him do that because I can't hurt him back. To save my life. You know, there's that kind of pacifism to the point of lack of self-preservation. And I kind of feel that Varian is that way. That's kind of how he's portrayed to me. It's like, it's so antithetical to the way we think we can't do it, is kind of what he implied in that pirate episode. And so, therefore, he is incapable of it. But here we see the passions that drive all of us, primitive man, welling up in him and resulting in exactly what would happen to anybody else in that situation. You would be mad. You would be in anguish. You would be beside yourself, and potentially some people will lash out. others will collapse into themselves. But that, for drama purposes, good. It's, you know, that's the climax of you've pulled to that point. But in the character of Varian, who's going to go back next week and be back to our pacifist guy, it loses something. Because now he isn't really, he's going to forget that he's learned something about himself, which is, it's there.
No, exactly. I mean, the series will do one enormous reset. And, I mean, I'm going to jump the timeline a little bit and say that there will be a callback to this episode at some point down the road, very soon down the road, if I remember right. But that is it. That's the only callback we're going to get. Aside from that, the lessons learned are not present. I mean, there is nothing really learned in terms of what our party does. I mean, they just go on. The only person who seems to be doing any kind of evolving, as you pointed out, is
Mr. Whiskers.
Is Willoway.
Yeah.
He's the only one who seems to be doing any kind of change. I mean, he's certainly not the same character we saw when we're first introduced to him, but everybody else is totally static. No changes whatsoever, and that's going to be the same thing here
Fred is not openly antagonistic towards Willoway either.
That's true. I'll give you that.
There wasn't anything necessarily for him to be antagonistic or negative about, but in the past he hasn't needed it. He's always, you know, like me making a crack, well, I'll bet Willoway's not going to be collecting any wood kind of thing. So he's got that sort of default Willoway's lazy, Willoway is Dr. Smith from Lost in Space,
right,
Willoway's attitude. And it wasn't in evidence here. It was almost like they were a proper team in this episode. And then, you know, who knows what happens next week. But certainly the people writing it don't know. One other thing that I wanted to mention, and it's kind of funny because, again, I was off at summer camp here for a week. And so there's an awful lot of high-fiving when people do things. You know, ooh, good job, high five. That's just what people do. And for a long time, you've seen that. And I'd forgotten the low five. I don't even know what they call it. Just give me five. The whole the whole 1970s, starting out with originally mostly black characters doing the whole slap in a hand thing with the five, which Fred does in this episode in such a way, it's like, wow, I'd forgotten that that's how it used to be done before it transformed into the high five. How long ago did that happen? When did we stop doing the five and go to the high five?
To be honest, I don't know, because I never participated in that much anyway.
Well,
not as a habit.
I can't say that I did, but I mean, it was obviously quite a lot more prevalent in the 1970s.
Yeah, but
TV.
I wasn't hanging around people that participated or practiced that.
They did it
with great regularity.
School.
The group of people I did, I mean, I hung around with didn't.
I can't say I personally did it, but I mean, people did do that in junior high school.
Well, yeah, they did.
School,
I just wasn't paying attention as to how long it lasted. When did the change? I wasn't watching because it was not of interest to me.
It felt so nostalgic when he did that. I'm like, sweat hogs.
Yeah, like
Sanford
I said,
the Sun. Yeah, yeah.
I never
the
really
Jeffersons. Yeah.
I mean, I might have seen it and maybe I registered in the back of my mind, like, oh yeah, that's how it used to be, and then I immediately dismissed it because to me it's just not that important.
And I can also sort of vaguely recall, and I may be just making this up in my mind, somebody trying to do that to Mark Harris in Man from Atlantis, and he just sort of tilts his head in that sort of "I do not understand what you are doing" kind of way, and then,
you know, I kind of want
to. You wish to give me to give you five? What?
I want to project that into Man from Atlantis as well. Seriously,
I just
think
it might
just for
actually
amusement.
Be in there.
I think it is. If it's not, it should be.
You want me to give you five? What?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Is there a purpose behind this, Elizabeth?
I do not have five of anything.
Yeah.
I just have this one pair of swim trunks.
And
I can give you one.
And I can give you a five webbed hand.
Good point. Okay, what have you got?
Well, all I've got left is I thought this episode was just crap. I mean, just crap. There is superstitious rubbish, which I found to be utterly insulting, as were the people who are perpetuating it. The attempt at making a love story for Varian was the biggest bit of nonsensical garbage I've seen this series put out so far. I mean, this is supposed to be a science fiction series.
Hold on, I just want to say that the scene at the end where Varian goes ape would be far more convincing if they hadn't drugged him into being in love with her. That's the other part with it where it's kind of funky weird.
Maybe, but again, because Varian is a different kind of person, maybe that drug was just not meant for him.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
So anyway, this is supposed to be, I mean, when it was being presented, I'm sure when they sent, when they approached the network executives, they came up with, this is a science fiction series. Aha! No, because there wasn't even an attempt at making this sci-fi. I mean, if the community of people that our heroes had stumbled across, had they been just savages from the beginning, you know, I could accept the pretense of Bedicus, this volcanic god, but by making them an advanced spacefaring alien race, what the writers have done is they've given us a story that is so bloody poor that it ends up failing at every turn, and it's largely between Bedicus and Varian and this love dart that he received. I mean, I disliked the episode when I first saw it. I still dislike it now. And one final thought is, if the people were so terrified, I mean, we talked a little bit earlier about our heroes thinking, volcano, let's go into another zone here. Hey, if the people there, if the aliens there were so terrified of this volcano, why the hell didn't they relocate?
They needed Jonathan Willoway to tell them to do that at the end.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, they needed that rebel sign.
They're the most
1960s.
Ignorant spacefaring race we've ever met.
It's like, well, we had this problem on our home world, and we escaped, and we came to this other world, and then we had this problem here, so
and now we're stuck
we
with
decided
it.
To do some superstition.
Yeah. That's basically it. Is there any reason why I really dislike this episode?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we could get into that whole, is it science fiction, is it not science fiction?
Oh, God, please.
Debate, but
we've had that discussion with this series enough times already.
I think it's as science fiction as Planet of the Apes, Logan's Run,
Man from Atlantis.
You know, they are quote unquote science fiction programs that are not science fiction programs.
They're marketed as such.
Concept. Well, they've got science fiction concepts in them. They got an advanced sub, or they've got laser guns, or whatever. But I mean, they are still just dramas that are being played in a backdrop that
they have a sci-fi wrapping to them.
Yeah, and they're not exploring any deep ideas. Again, taking the pompous idea that science fiction is supposed to explore deep ideas and present them in new and fascinating ways to make you think and go, this doesn't do that. This is strictly melodrama.
Bad melodrama.
It's melodrama where they can take plot shortcuts by having magic love darts, or you can have Varian see the future in a dream and you go, well, Varian's a man from the 23rd century with awesome powers. Of course he can see the future. Kind of thing that you might not buy off on if it were on Gunsmoke. So, I think it's no more or no less science fiction than the last episode and the episode before that and the episode before that. It's just, this should be a new term for it. Science fictional melodrama.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lousy term, but it's the idea conceived. I got nothing else.
I mean, this was melodramatic sci-fi.
So,
and
okay.
Bad. Just garbage. I mean, this almost generated anger.
I am angry watching this episode that they haven't canceled this show yet.
Yeah, you want it canceled during your mid-YouTube watchings.
Yeah.
I want this removed from YouTube. It's so offensive.
Well, on that depressing note, Ben, thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you.
And listeners, I hope you'll join us all again next time on Fusion Patrol.
Cheers.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us, leave us a review on iTunes, or stop by and visit at our website, FusionPatrol.com. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Search for Fusion Patrol. Or just drop us a note at feedback@FusionPatrol.com. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolfe.